Three, two, one. And welcome back to the SBH podcast. In this podcast, I'm going to talk about my struggles of trying to catch a fish this spring of 2020. I've gone on some missions. Believe me, I have put in some work. And I actually just came back from fishing. I'm hoping that the fish are going to be earlier than they were last season. And to put it into perspective, I caught my first fish last season on Cape Ann, May 4th. I think as we're filming this, it's maybe the 27th or 28th of April. I think I have no idea. Honestly, I have no idea. I'm sure a lot of you are in the same boat right now, this quarantine. I don't know what day it is, but all I know is that it's going to be May this week at some point. I think it's May 1st on either Thursday or Friday. I'm sure, I have no idea. You guys can tell me. Actually, don't. It's fine. I've been doing a lot of fishing. I went to Cape Cod last weekend and fished and got my ass kicked by fish completely. There's one guy that caught a fish on a fly rod out of all things, and he was very lucky. There's probably, I don't know, maybe 15 guys or more fishing there where I was on Cape Cod, and some guys were fishing with sandworms, a lot were fishing with plugs, and only one guy caught a fish in like 2 hours. So that was a tough pill to swallow for me, at least. Because I hate not catching fish when I know they're there. And you know that. I mean, the thing is, I talk a lot about catching fish. I also talk a lot about, you know, successes that I've had. But I fail, and sometimes I fail very hard. And that would be the entirety of this week, was just me failing upon failing upon failing at trying to catch fish. And it sucks, but you know, we're all in the same deal here. You know, it's not necessarily that easy in the state of the fishery and everything to catch fish, especially super early in the season. There are fish around. They're just not the mass, like the big bulk of fish are not in Massachusetts yet. Wow. They're not in Massachusetts yet. Sorry, I can't speak for some reason. Anyway, so this podcast is just going to be a run through of what I've been doing, what I've been thinking, and what I've kind of like started to turn to. And on top of that, I was fishing at a spot today that has produced lots of large fish for me last season, upwards of my biggest fish of the season. And, I caught my biggest fish of the season there last year. I also caught my first fish of the season last year there. So May 4th, it's off the rocks. It's attached to a pond area, outflow. Wow, I can't speak again, sorry. My brain is not working for some reason today. Anyway, so the outflow of this like little pond area, and it tends to, I think there might be some alewife action that go into that pond. So, and what I mean by that is that the bait fish around there in the spring is alewife, and that's why there's some larger fish in the area early in the season, as well as fish early in the season in general. So I'm super stoked to feel like I can start the season now. And I don't feel too crazy about starting the season on Cape Ann, you know, I think it's the 27th maybe today. I'm not sure. I'm excited to be able to start the season off this early and feel pretty confident the fish are going to be in this week. And the reason I'm saying that is May 4th last year was when I caught my first fish of the season. And the bass in certain places, and I don't necessarily think Massachusetts, but in certain places have been up to 2 weeks early this migration. So if you think about it, we should have had fish last week, which I would be, you know, I know for a fact that that's not the case, because they barely had fish on Cape Cod last week. And so I've heard reports. I've heard whispers and rumors that there was a good biomass of fish that moved through the canal, which means that they should start showing up here, you know, any day now, I hope. And I'm going to just keep grinding it out all week and then all next week. I'm pretty much going to be fishing every day from now until I catch my first fish of the season. I'm going to be doing some estuary stuff. I'm going to be doing some stuff off the rocks. I'm going to mix it up just depending on the wind. Today, I went against what I talk a lot about is always fishing like a wind that's blowing straight on shore. And I actually fished a place where the wind was blowing offshore today, which probably didn't help my odds of catching a fish, but it was rather sporty. And where I fished today, there was, oh my God, the juiciest amount of current I've fished in a long time. I was fishing and I was casting my small SP minnow out there, and it was just like shaking in the current. I didn't even hardly have to reel. That's how much current was moving through this area. And then I think back to all the times I've drifted an eel through there and had it smashed by a 30, 40 pound bass. And I'm like, there's a reason for that, because current in boulder fields is deadly, especially wave sweep current. And especially when the wind is blowing onshore, I just keep saying like, and a moon, like all of that is just key for very large fish. And, I want to not rely as heavily on eels. I want to get my biggest fish of the season on a Pumba plug, to be exact. I think that I can do it on probably the, shad swimmers. I don't know if I have anything. Oh yeah, I do have the Blurple one right here. Sorry for this noise because I'm taking it off where the microphone is. But I want to get one on the shad swimmer, see if I can. Yeah, there you go. I don't know. It's the one with the lip. So I'm hoping to get. I think that is a plug that I could get my biggest fish of the season on this year. We have the giant double jointed swimmers. And so there's like a lot of plugs that I would love to catch that I think can catch big fish on them. And I've been doing a lot of, I've had the amount of people that have asked me about hooks is regarding like the plugs that I use and what I use them for hooks is staggering. And the amount of suggestions I got were also staggering. So I have some homework to do this season. I need to try out a whole bunch of plugs. I need to see what works. And for me, the biggest thing is really, sharpness and strength of the plug. I don't care if I'm fishing with a tuna grade hook. I will throw that on a plug because I mean, as you know, and I've said a lot, I fish with lockdown drag, and I don't lose fish because of that. I didn't lose, and I'm gonna knock on wood, and I'm saying just for last season too, just so karma doesn't bite me on this one. But last season particularly could be completely different this season because it was obviously all luck. I didn't lose a single fish over probably 15 pounds last season. I guess there was a few, but I wasn't really that mad about it because I was on a ridiculous bite and I'd like hook up on a fish and it would shake and it like pulled some drag and then would shake the hook. But I was on a ridiculous bite, and I probably lost one that was probably 15, maybe 20 pounds. But, like, again, it was nothing, like, to cry about or dream of, like, be dreaming about, you know. Because when you lose a giant fish, I guarantee you, you will be dreaming about it and kicking yourself and thinking about every angle that you could have done better. And I've done a lot of that, especially once, so, like, really, the big thing for me in the spring is, I mean, I have school because I'm still in high school, so I have school, so I don't really get a lot of time to, think about fishing, generally. Like, I do a ton. Like, I pretty much think about it. If I'm not thinking about other things, it's always fishing. But I don't really get to the point where I just start running through everything. And it is so bad with the fact that I don't really have that much school right now. The fact that I'm just sitting around and just pondering all day. I've even started to read books about how to build rods just so I have a very good understanding of the components in a rod. And I'll probably do a podcast of what I've learned because I think it's very interesting. But I'll do that probably later. I just want to make sure I know everything perfectly before I start talking about this with any sort of knowledge. But right now, I'm just trying to learn as much as I can about different equipment and what components go into it. Because as far as the technical side of like what's inside a rod and why, I've never even like put an ounce of thought into. I'm like, it casts, if it casts well, it can hold a big fish, has a good backbone to it or whatever, and it works for my application, great. That's as much as I like moderate light action or a medium or heavy action rod. That's as far as I would go. And even then I was like, I don't even know really what that is. But now I'm just trying to really understand it. Not that I didn't know what that was, but like I'm trying to understand it to a very technical point. I'm excited to learn about that stuff and excited that I have time to do that. But I'm also getting back into what I was saying before, is I'm kicking myself to fish because I really like, it doesn't feel real how much I want to catch a fish right now. It's just like, I can't even like describe the amount of like how badly I want to hook into a fish right now. I don't care how big it is. And the thing is, I don't fish in freshwater. Like if I was like, because I'm not good at it. I'm a very one-dimensional angler as far as species go. I fish for striped bass, and that's it. I have a broad knowledge of other fish, but very lightly. I could go maybe an inch deep on other fish, and that's it. So when I'm fishing for striped bass particularly, I just need to catch a striped bass specifically because I can't go. I mean, I could probably try to go fish for largemouth bass. I could probably try to go fish for brook trout or whatever. But, and I love doing that, but I need something that's going to like be a little bit more aggressive. Like I need a saltwater fish, you know what I'm saying? Sorry, I'm drinking water because I just came back from fishing for like 2 hours. So, I fished today. There was a ton of weed in the water because it's been blowing 30 to, what was it, 30 to like 50 miles an hour sustained. No, it wasn't 50. It was probably 30 to 40 miles an hour sustained, like blowing like crazy all day. And it was funny because even like a few towns over wasn't as much as where I am at. So it's crazy because I was looking at Cape Cod and it was not even nearly as windy on Cape Cod. Not that that really makes much, even though that's pretty far away. But I'm pretty positive that there are fish in South Boston area, the South Shore, which is cool, which means that when this always happens, this is like the week before the week before. I'm assuming we're going to catch fish next week. I wouldn't be surprised if I catch fish either on about the exact same day that I caught my first fish last year or even a little bit later, just because it's been so nasty. It's been so nasty this past week, and it's going to get worse. It's going to be really, really bad weather-wise for like getting the fish here as quick as possible. If it was 55 to 60 degrees and sunny, the fish would be here within days. But it's rainy and it's been cold. It's been even into the 30 degrees and it's not been fun. And the thing is, when it's like this, the fish are not, they're not like feeding very aggressively regardless, unless this is like later in the year. If something was like, if we were in June, I would want rain. Or if we were in July or August, I'd want rain because the fishing is better normally when there's like some sort of a storm going on, because it just kind of starts getting everything churned up and all the bait is moving around and the wind is blowing and you end up catching more fish. But when it's early in spring, the wind is killing me here. The wind is really killing me. Sorry, I just kicked my chair. The wind is really killing me here. But what's even more killing me is the temperature. Like I can understand, you know, if it's windy and rainy, but it's been so cold and it's not stopping. And it's so ridiculous because it's colder now than I feel like it was in March. And like worse weather. Cause I was out, you know, in March, I was out in a shorts and a t-shirt multiple days, and it was comfortable. It was like in the 50s and it was comfortable. And that's why the fish were absolutely flying along the coast. And then they get to that, like Martha's Vineyard, Cape Cod, South Cape Cod area. And they just sat for like, I felt like a week. They just sat there and didn't move and progress for a week. And it was killing me. I was like, come on. This is like the most ridiculous thing ever. Just, you know, I'm trying to rush it. And it's just like, you can't really rush a migration here. You just got to embrace the fact that this is the last week before I don't get sleep for months. Especially like I have nothing going on but fishing for the whole summer now. So I can just focus on catching fish from the time they show up and pretty much all the way, like, you know, and I'm assuming, like, with the whole virus and everything, I don't think we'll end up going back to school in the fall. So I feel very, very confident we're not going to be going back to school in the fall. And so I feel like I should literally be able to fish the entirety of the season on both sides. And so meticulously and hard that I can hit every moon phase perfectly. If I do it right, I should be able to hit every moon phase perfectly. I should be able to hit every tide perfectly and just time myself out. So I know, okay, hit this location at this wind and at this tide. And then during the day, do the exploring, go look in on sandy beaches, look for rips, mark them down on Google Earth. Here's a tip for you. And what I do is I drop a pin on, like, not Google Earth, but like Google Maps, for instance. I'll drop a pin and I will like save it as a favorite location. And for all the areas that I'm gonna like search for. So if I'm looking at spots and I think, okay, these look cool from Google Earth, then what I do is I drop a pin, I save it as a favorite location, and then I can go there and fish exactly where I dropped that pin and know there should be a rip here, there should be some boulders here, should be deeper water here, whatever. So that's what I've been doing a lot of. And I did it for Cape Cod, and I went there and there's 15 anglers, and I had no prior information to that spot in general. I just looked out on Google Earth and said, this looks good. There's a salt pond leading to the beach, the sandy beach, like salt pond estuary area, coming through this little channel. It's a little choke point. The bass are going to be funneled in and out of here during the tides. And, you know, we should be good fishing. So that was the hope. We went there. It was not that good fishing. And it was funny, actually, one of the guy, the friend of the fly fisherman, there's two guys fishing, the friend of the fly fisherman, I don't know if you're listening to this podcast, but he recognized me and DM'd me later. So if you ever, and it's so weird to think, and when I'm doing this, because I'm just like, this is new to me, I'm trying to do this so I can do this forever. I love doing, producing content and catching fish. And if I can do a bit of both, and it can help me, then I want to be producing content. I want to be able to do all of this, you know? And, but if you guys ever like see me, I'm just hearing some noises. That's why I keep pausing. Cause I'm just trying to make sure you guys can't pick it up. I don't think you'll be able to hear it anyway. Sorry. So I get back to what I said. So the guy recognized me, and he DM'd me later, and we talked, and he seemed like a really nice, really cool dude. You guys killed it. You were the only ones on the beach that caught a fish in 2 hours. So, or at least your buddy was. So good job to him. And you know, congratulations on like, I assume that's one of the first fish you guys caught this spring. So congratulations on that. And if you guys ever see me out in public, then just come up and say what's up or DM me later or whatever. Because I don't like when I'm creating all this content and on Instagram or whatever, and I have like a 1,000 or almost 2,000 now. So thanks everyone that has been following me and giving me like support and asking questions. And like, it's been so much fun. It's just something to do in the winter. It's is great. It's been a great way for me to get through the winter months as painless as possible, not as least cabin fever as I could do. Before now, I'm like dying, but I feel like it all saved up for now. But thank you guys so much for being so supportive. But it's so weird because, you know, I don't fully understand the amount of people that are actually seeing the content that I'm creating and the putting out there. It's pretty extraordinary, the sheer amount of people. So that's just like, it's just mind blowing that, you know, once you actually see the faces behind just the numbers, it's pretty crazy. Anyway, but I want to get back into kind of what I'm thinking. I was fishing on some of the more popular sandy beaches on Cape Ann. And as you know, in these areas, there are estuaries and there are rivers. And I went to a river, and it's where I filmed the quick tip. And also, by the way, we have another quick tip on pencil popping that is going to come out next, or the day after this podcast comes out. So look forward to that coming out. That's a sick. And if you're listening to this, go to my YouTube channel, Striped Bass Hunt on YouTube. And I'm producing what I'm calling quick tips, which is just like everything from like beginner level, like stuff, like knots and gear and whatever, or knots and like little, like how to work certain plugs, to more technical stuff, like the gear that I'm using and the techniques that I'm using to target fish. And I'm gonna put them out like as much as I can, especially once the actual show starts going on, which is really gonna start probably late July timeframe. And we're hopefully gonna, and it has been, by the way, the video quality that we're getting is extraordinary so far, and I even caught fish yet. I've been on the attack to try to find some bass, but it's been tough. And so I think that with certain things that I've been doing, like these rivers that I know hold tons of shad and alewife and, you know, whatever, are coming up in the rivers, and I've been every day, I'm pretty much checking these alewife ladders and stuff in rivers and whatever, so I can see if there's action going on, because then I know, okay, if I position myself at this river mouth, I can fish here, and it's gonna hopefully help me out. And so I'm trying to, you know, because I'm learning myself, trying to see what is the best way to fish in these certain areas, and which is really awesome when you're thinking about it. Like, I'm not super experienced in fishing in these estuaries, and I've been, you know, looking at these rips and looking at the like little choke points, and like I've been deciphering these areas, and it's been really good. I've been figuring out areas where I will be able to catch hopefully lots of fish, because number one, there's just tons of bait in the water early season, and I'm seeing tons of bait in the water. I'm seeing these great mussel bed areas, these perfect little rips, and these perfect little rises that are creating disturbances and current breaks, and it's pretty awesome. Little rocks sticking out. It's gonna be absolutely fantastic once the season once it like really starts kicking off. I'm gonna be able to start it in the estuaries. Like, I didn't start it in the estuaries last year. I was fishing off the rocks, but I got one May 4th, which is early. I mean, you think about it, like, generally on Cape Ann, the rule of thumb is the bass show up around May 1st. That would be pretty correct, because, you know, you should be able to catch them, especially early if the weather's been really good, which it has been all year. We should be able to get bass early. And I'd hope to get them in April. It might not happen, but we might be able to get them in April, because, you know, and I feel like I'm kind of talking in circles, so I'm going to just get off topic of getting them in April, because I've talked about that a lot as far as the weather being warmer and everything. And then targeting in estuaries, which is what I've done a lot. And I'm not, and this is going to be, again, I've done two podcasts now that are just more of just my mind dump into what I've been just contemplating over and over and over again. But I think it's important, and I think that it's, if you guys listen to it, and it's kind of interesting, because what I've been thinking is, you have early season, you start way up in these estuaries, which are rivers, I guess. So you have these rivers that break out into these estuaries. So you go right up to the, where kind of the water starts meeting the salt, or the fresh water starts meeting the salt water, and you start fishing at that, like, that cutoff point. Then you start, and you, hopefully you start catching fish there, because that's where there's going to be alewife. That's where the bass are going to go to the furthest point to feed on the you know, whatever's the bait that's going to be there. And then as the season gets a little bit, like, further along, so let's call it, I don't know, maybe early June, if you go, you start throwing big Danny plugs around in the estuaries, then stuff is going to start kicking off. And then you move out onto the boulder fields in or still early June time frame. You move into the boulder fields, and you start throwing some eels around, some rigged eels. You start throwing big, like, topwater spook-style plugs, the Magnum Walker, and some larger, like, pencils maybe. And that's where you start getting into those bigger, like, trophy-class-size fish early season in around here. And that's what we did last season. I was throwing spook-style plugs early in the season. I was catching a lot of low 30-inch bass, and then all of a sudden got a 43. So, you know, that's what you got to do. You got to start off early. You got to start off in the rocks and the boulder fields. Boom, 33. Then you start throwing eels the next day. Boom, 48. And then a few weeks later, another 48. So that was what it was like for me last season. But I was only piecing together little pieces. Now I know exactly what I need to be doing from the start, which is getting into these places during these moon phases and start throwing big, big stuff around good key tides. That's what I'm going to be really focusing on. Focus on slack tide on both sides of high and slack tide on both sides of low tide around these early season rivers and estuaries will work well too. But I like it off the rocks. I'm a big, like, that's my place, and that's what I'm going to be doing, especially early in the season, because number one, early in the season, I'm just going to be doing a lot of recon in these off the sandy beaches and in the estuaries, but I'm not going to be fishing there for trophy class fish, just period, because I would love to catch a 30 or 40 in off of a sandy beach and off of the rocks on Cape Ann, but I don't feel confident enough that I could, and I don't want to waste any moon phases, because I could, in every single one of the moon phases that I fish, in every single one of those spots that I feel super confident in, especially my early season spots, early season, I feel like you have the ability to catch a 50-pound fish there, or larger even. I bet you could catch, I mean, this sheer amount of, like, huge fish that have to be there in order for, like, me to be catching them on plugs is extraordinary. I mean, you think about, there's a ton of fish, like, that will follow your plug or your eel and then just, like, say no. And the amount of times that I'm sure 50-pound plus fish have followed my eels or followed my plugs and then just were like, no, I'm good, would, like, give me a heart attack, because I'm sure it happens all the time. And I think that if I narrow it down to where I know there's going to be big fish in the area, I know what plugs are going to work because they're feeding on adult bunker. I know that if I am throwing huge eels at these big fish, they're going to weed out the smaller ones and I could get into some bigger fish. And I've had a lot of questions about how do I got a question recently where somebody was asking me, hey, I've caught a lot of schoolies and I'm tired. He's gotten to that point in his fishing where he's like, I'm done catching schoolie size fish. I want to start catching some bigger fish. And every single time I try to go catch big fish, I always end up catching a whole bunch of schoolies. And he's like, so how do I transition from catching a bunch of little fish to then catching a big fish? And I told him, upgrade size of plugs and fish at night. And then hopefully you'll be able to weed through enough small fish, even though, like, you could be using a huge, like, big plug, huge, double jointed swimmer. If you're fishing that, and you're fishing that early season and you're catching a whole bunch of shorts on that plug, or you would be catching a whole bunch of shorts if you're throwing like an SP minnow or something. You throw that big plug in there, you might catch a couple smaller fish, but that's going to weed out anything under 20 inches for sure. And then you might be catching stuff that is from 20 inches all the way up to 50 inches, but you'll at least have that ability to weed out those smaller fish that could be getting in the way of a 50-inch fish from eating your plug. And I hope that worked for him, and I hope that is going to work for him. But every place fishes differently. You know, I fish on Cape Ann. There's not a lot of guys that are, like, writing in the journals. There's, like, maybe one or two guys that are from my area that will be writing in, like, On the Water magazine or Surfcaster's Journal and stuff like that. So when I was first starting out, I had very little knowledge of, okay, how do I attack my areas? And so you'd read little bits and pieces from, you know, New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, and whatever. And then you could kind of take a little bits and pieces from that and apply it to your areas. You read stuff on about fishing Cape Cod. There's a lot of beaches that are extremely similar to beaches on Cape Cod on Cape Ann. So if you you read articles about fishing like what Nauset Beach and stuff, the like huge, big, giant beaches, and on with big surf and whatever, there's certain areas that you can go and apply that exact same techniques in, like looking for big sandbars and troughs and you know, cuts in between the sandbars where the current is, you know, coming out and everything like that. You can throw big, you know, little neck swimmers or whatever out there, darters, needlefish, which I'm going to get way more into, especially if I'm fishing off of the sandy beaches. I want to be throwing needlefish way more. I also want to be throwing needlefish in like the boulder fields because I don't do it enough. And I think that it's a way that produces big fish. And it's one of the most like, you know, striped, like if it's a very like that, like is a very like has landed so many tons of large fish that the needlefish has. And I've caught a lot of fish on needlefish, especially when there's bunker around, throwing like the smaller, like thicker needlefish out there, and I was catching tons of fish that were feeding on a little peanut bunker in the like at night 3 years ago. There was a blitz and I was catching a whole bunch of stuff on pencils, and then I threw out a fatter little needlefish. I think it was a super strike needlefish, I'm not entirely sure. It was like the bullet, I think is what it's called, and I was reeling it across like it sinks. It was like the slow sinking, maybe the fast sinking one. I was reeling it really fast, like in the top of the surface, and I kept getting hits and hits and hits and hits, but they're all tiny fish. And then I got into them. I was like, okay, slow it down a bit, slow it down a bit. All of a sudden, boom, every cast was a fish for like an hour, and I caught like 50 fish. Not really, but like I caught tons and tons of bass. I probably caught over 20 fish in an hour in that spot. It was like epic fishing. And that was my first taste of, okay, night fishing can be very productive. And that literally was when I was like, I need the fish next season. I need the fish more at night. And was that the season before? No, that was 3 seasons ago. So no, I didn't fish at night very much the following season. And then I didn't really start fishing it because I've talked a lot about, my progression into fishing, but for night fishing in particular, if you guys haven't heard this, I hate fishing at night. I hate it, but I also love it at the same time. But I was always like, I always felt paranoid at night. I know a lot of guys are the same way, and I'm just like afraid. But when I'm fishing, and I just get paranoid at night sometimes. So I sometimes will, especially when I was starting out, I would listen to music in a earbud. And it actually turned into a way of me being able to like call people and stuff without having to like mess around with my phone. So I do it now. I wear earbuds. Not necessarily am I listening to music. Sometimes I'm not listening to anything. I just have like Bluetooth waterproof earbuds in, and I listen to them. I use Jaybird Tyra Pros or something. So if you want to look into those, those are waterproof. And I used Power Beats 3s before as well. And the reason I got those was just because they fit over the ear very like securely. And I like the wired earbuds. I would lose like AirPods instantly if I try to fish with them. And so that's why I don't use them. But I try to use like waterproof earbuds, and that's why I was kind of using that stuff. And I, you know, it works. And sometimes I'll listen to podcasts as I'm fishing as well, or audiobooks. That's why literally in the fall when I'm like reading books for school, I get them on audiobook and I just put them in my ears and just listen to them as I'm fishing. And I've killed it. Literally, I've hooked multiple. Because all schools have like a summer reading book, that you have to read. And dude, the one book that I was reading, whenever I'd be listening to that, I would be catching giant fish. I don't know what was up. That was like when it first started, when I started reading that book. It was hilarious. Whenever I'd hook like a 15-pound bass, I would have to like skip back like 30 minutes because I just would forget everything that was going on in the book because I would be hooking into 30-pound or 35-inch fish. And so that's what I do when I fish at night because I would get paranoid, but now I don't because I feel super comfortable in it. I had to always walk around. Like when I first started, I had to use a headlamp whenever I'd be going anywhere, but now I literally don't need to use any light. I do use light when I'm on hooking a fish because I think that it's a very easy way to hook your hand, like extremely easy way to hook yourself if you're trying to unhook a fish with no lights on. So unless I'm fishing with a single hook, the cool thing is I fish in places that nobody else fishes. Literally, I could count the amount of people that I've seen in the spots that I've fished on one hand, and I know how good all of them are, and I know that like they don't, like first of all, they would not know why they caught a big fish there. Or they wouldn't be able to like catch a big fish because what would happen is they'd hook it and they lose it in the rocks or whatever. And then on top of that, I don't think they would understand why they caught a big fish if they did. So they wouldn't really be able to repeat it. So they don't really pose much of a threat. The thing is, I'm the most competitive fisherman. I'm so competitive. It's ridiculous. With myself, with other anglers, I hate fishing near people because I get way too competitive against them. I'm like, I need to outfish them. That's like my goal. I need to be outfishing them. I can't do it. And if people show up in areas where I'm fishing, I bail. Almost every time I'll just leave, even if I'm doing well, just because I'm not in the mood to either show them what's going on or like be even near where other anglers are. So I hate fishing in like very populated areas. And that being said, I'm perfectly fine to fish with people. Like I bring people out all the time. I love getting people on big fish. I love doing it. That's why I'm probably going to start guiding next season. But I like catching large fish, and I like putting other people on large fish. I think that the places that I fish are, you know, good in that regard, that I don't see a lot of people. When I do, it's like, it freaks me out, especially at night, because sometimes I'll be walking back or walking across the rocks, and all of a sudden there'll be somebody else there, and I'll like jump because I'm not expecting them to be right in front of me. I can walk across the rocks without a light, and I can, do most of everything. It's similar to fishing during the day. It's just the fact that you can't see subtle differences in the water. You can, but it's much more difficult, and I'm not the greatest at reading water immediately. It takes me a while to really figure out exactly what's going on in the area. And that's a good thing and a bad thing. I mean, because you want to put time in. If you want to like make a spot work, you want to put your time in that area. And I that's what I do. I put my time in every single one of my spots. So I know them religious. Like I know them so well, like the back of my hand, that I know all the little areas that the fish are going to be set up in. And then I can target each spot. And the goal is not wasting casts. The less casts you waste, the more fish you'll be catching. And that's really like people just start lack of thinking of what they're doing. They're just doing the action of what they're doing. Like, oh, I'm just throwing out an eel. I'm just throwing an eel out in just multiple different areas. But what I want to do is I want to be like, okay, I want my eel here because there's a rock there and the fish are going to be sitting here. So I cast my eel there every single time, let it drift into that spot, cast up, let it drift into that spot every single time. And then if I'm like, okay, I need to be doing some search casting because I'm not catching anything, then I'll start spraying casts around. But, and I've caught tons of fish with on a whim casts. Like one of my 40 pound bass, it was right before, like, it was still kind of dark or kind of like light out still. And I had an eel and I hooked the eel up. I literally threw it into the water beside me so it didn't tangle up my line. I just got my finger on the thing and just flicked it out there just so that I could like get the eel relaxed a little bit so it didn't tangle my line up. I put my finger onto I got out to the rock, hooked up my first eel, tossed it in the water, gained up my line, casted it out, put my finger on the line, got it onto the line roller, took two cranks, and I was into a 40-pound bass. And yeah, so that's how that night went. Really, really quick. Boom, I was into a 40-pound bass. And so sometimes what happens is, and it was not even where I wanted to cast, that was just me trying to get the eel chilled out. Because people bang their eels on the ground, like, what are you doing? The whole point of a live eel is for it to be alive, not for it to be dead. So when you want your eel to be swimming down into the strike zone, like, you don't want it to be like floating up on the surface. Because if you've ever fished eels during the day, you cast them out there, especially when it's super clear water, and they'll be floating like on the surface or maybe a foot under the surface, unless they're swimming down into the boulders where they're getting eaten. Unless the fish are feeding extremely, extremely aggressively, which a lot of the time they are when they're eating eels, they'll feed aggressively. They don't hit a dead eel on the surface of the water. They can. I've seen it happen multiple times. But they have to be feeding aggressively. And a lot of the time, the biggest fish won't be like, okay, I'm going to go flying up at the surface and hit this eel that's just dragging along the surface, even though a lot of the time they will. It just depends on how aggressive they're feeding. I think that you can catch bigger fish, though, if you have a very lively eel and it swims down into the rocks. The bass are going to pound it instantly. And it's going to be, they will take the rod out of your hand. And I fish in a spot where the bass always are, like, when they're feeding extraordinarily aggressively. They swallow eels like that. So as soon as you feel that tap, your hook setting, and it's back in their throat, too. People try to feed eels to them. I've fished the biggest eels that you can buy at a tackle store, to the point that, like, I went to the tackle store once and they said, we haven't sold these eels because they're too big. And I'm fishing eels that are too big for normal people. And I was like, okay, cool, you know, give them to me, whatever. And they actually gave them to me for free because they're like, these are not like where we can't get, like, nobody's gonna buy these. And then I caught a 45-inch bass on it. So, like, that just shows you that, like, that was a huge eel. That was like a 23-inch eel. That's giant. And, you know, it got eaten and swallowed by, it was literally gut, like, on the verge of being pretty, I mean, I guess it was technically gut hooked. I was able to unhook that one. It was fine. The bass wasn't bleeding. It was good. And I released it perfectly fine. And I did it quick. I got it, like, I saw that the hook was deep. I unhooked it and, like, revived it quick, boom, it was back in the water. And it was gone. And it was, like, really aggressively back in the water. Like, as soon as I unhooked it and set it in the water, you know how that sometimes they just, like, kick like crazy? Because I fight all my fish super hard, so they're always very lively when I get them to me. And so then, boom, it was off. So that was good. But I'm just trying to tell you here, like, if the bass are feeding aggressively, there's not an eel they won't swallow. And I don't care if you're fishing a perfect circle hook now with your season, with this new regulations, you know, if it's a big enough fish and it's hungry enough, that circle hook's going to do nothing. It's going to be in the stomach of the fish if they feed it. Some people say, hold your rod up parallel and let them start pulling out line before your hook setting. I can't even, like, imagine if it's a big enough fish, it's going to already have processed the eel by that time. You know, it's gonna it's gonna have eaten and dissolved the whole eel off your hook. So, so that's why, you know, that's why I don't really, I'm not gonna be feeding the bass my eels. And you can tell I've been calling around when the eels are in at the tackle stores, I buy them. Because I want to fish eels as soon as possible, because I know that that's my best way that I can get on the biggest fish as early as I can. And even though people say, oh, there's only schoolies around early in the season, you could legitimately catch a 50-pound bass the first day the bass are on your area, whether that be Cape, New York, New Jersey, Cape Cod, whatever. There are giant fish that will be with those schoolies. It's just a fact. There will be. There's not. It might not be in the sheer number, but there could be giant fish around as well. And the thing is, you want to be able to get those bigger fish, because if there are huge bait fish early in the season, like the alewife, that the bass are going to be feeding on. And the alewife, if you haven't seen them, the shad or whatever, it can be huge. They can be 15 inches and giant, huge, big, deep bodies. And that takes a big fish to eat that. So there are going to be larger fish around, and you throw an eel in there, boom, you get a fish early, real early, you get a fish. So you want to put yourself in the scenario that you can actually end up hooking into that fish early season wise. And I've been just trying to get in that first schoolie, because as soon as the fish are in, they're in. I can start progressing. You catch that first schoolie of the season, now catch that first keeper of the season. Now catch that first 30, over slot limit sized fish. Now catch the first, 30, 40-pound fish. That's what you want to do. Try to progress each time, you know, and it might not be instant, but if you think about it in that regard, is I'm trying to progress each time I fish. I'm trying to catch bigger fish or more fish or whatever. That's, for me, how I look at it, and that's me being very competitive with myself, trying to get the biggest fish every single time I fish. And I talked about it in the last podcast or a few podcasts ago. I talked about how when I fish, I try to target the biggest fish in the water that I'm fishing. So if I'm fishing a boulder field, I want the biggest fish in that 30 yard, 40 yard, even more, 50, 60 yard area that I'm fishing. And I want to be able to target the biggest fish there. And so I throw the plugs and the whatever that I can, the way that I, if I have to chunk to catch or live line bait, I don't know, bunker or whatever, I'll do it. As long as I'm catching the biggest fish I can. I've nothing against chunking. I've nothing against throwing live bait. I've nothing against throwing eels. And of course there's ways that I prefer to fish. I don't like chunking, but if I know that that's the way I'm going to catch the biggest fish, that's the way I'm going to be fishing. I want to be able to catch the biggest fish in the area. And a lot of the time that's eels, a little bit of the time that's chunk bait, depending on the scenario. I wouldn't say as much in the rocks, because then you have crabs and lobsters, and, it's just it's super tough when you're fishing in the rocks, because you have a lot of that type of bycatches, you could say, that will eat your bait and whatever, and the bass won't come and eat that. Where if you're fishing off of a sandy beach, you can throw a big chunk, and there's, you do have crabs, but you won't, it's not as likely that you'll have as many crabs or other fish to be eating your bait till, but there are, And that's the one downside to fishing with a chunk bait, is that there are other fish that you can be catching. Less so with eels. I've not caught a single bycatch fishing with an eel, including a bluefish. I've never caught a bluefish on an eel either. So I think that I think eels are kind of they're very odd. I feel like they're the perfect bait. If you had to design a bait, that a live bait to be exact, you would design something that's hardy enough that it can be, and I've had this happen to me, escape from your tank and sit on hot, hot pavement for hours and dry up, and then be able to throw it back in the water and be able to rehydrate itself and be perfectly fine. and then be able to hook it through the head and cast it out there for hours with it staying alive. And then also it being like sturdy enough that you can cast the thing as hard as you want. If you hook it well, it won't come flying off your hook. So especially if they're big enough too. I've casted plenty of eels off though. That 100% happens. That's why I'm going to get more into fishing rigged eels this season. I have a huge, huge 22, maybe 23 inch rigged eel, which I did a podcast rigging that eel, that I am dying to throw in my ODM Jigstar rod with my 275 Vanstall VSX, an 80 pound Max Quattro braid, attached to an 80 pound Blue Label Seaguar fluorocarbon leader, with a, I think it's an Owner circle hook, and you know, hopefully wreck a huge fish. I guess it's not a rigged eel. I don't know why I said Owner circle hook, because that would be for an eel. But for the rigged eel, I have VMC, like big VMC hooks, like bigger than this, like the size bigger than that hook. I think it's, I don't know how big this hook is, but it's a big hook. And I have the size bigger than this on that, because this would be too small for that eel. That eel was twice the thickness of this hook here, and that's a pretty thick hook. Let's just measure it because I can. That hook is an inch from in width. It was probably a 2-inch thick eel, and I had to get a hook that was 2 inches thick to be able to thread through and hook, and for it to be even worth it. So, and that's something that I'm sketched out about, because I feel like I might need beefier hooks on my rigged eels, because rigged eels catch big fish, and they catch really, really big fish, and especially giant rigged eels catch giant fish, and you could catch something way over 50 pounds. On a rigged eel, especially of that size, of it being like a 22, 23 inch rigged eel. So that just puts into perspective. I think I weighed it on the podcast and it was 2 pounds. It was 2 pounds. The rigged eel was 2 pounds. And that Boga grip, I feel like, I mean, I guess it's pretty correct. I feel like I've tested it out a bunch of times, and I always, whenever I'm fishing, I'm like, I feel like the fish is bigger than that, but whatever. But when I'm weighing the fish, because, you know, as me being a fisherman, I always want the fish to be as big as possible. And a lot of my 40-pound fish, I actually, in the moment, I was like, yeah, this is a 40-pound fish. But when you think back at it and you look back at the photos, you're like, oh man, that's a close to a 50-pound fish. And the photos don't do it justice. I've talked about this a lot. You know, when I'm holding these fish, I'm like pretty large. And so when I'm holding these fish out, they seem smaller than they actually are. Because I'm a pretty, pretty big dude. And so if you're small and you're holding a big fish, and also depends on camera angles too, but you can make a fish look ginormous. But when you're like 6'3", it's a little bit different. I know there's a lot of guys that are taller than me that fish, but I'm just saying, you know how it is. If you're my height, it's hard to make a fish look big. That's why I try my best. But the thing for me is like, I don't want to keep the fish, you know? So I want to get a cool, sick picture that shows off the fish. I mean, it's less about me. That's why in almost all of my photos, I'm looking away from the camera, because I don't want the focus to be me with the fish. I want to focus on the fish. When I like look at like my photos, I'm admiring the fish. And then kind of, because I know how big I am, so I can see it to scale on me holding the fish. But you can never, you almost never see my face in the pictures where I'm holding big fish. And that's because I just want to show the fish off. And the bass, all of the fish that I was catching last season were so pretty, like healthy, good, like no weird like lesions and like bloody marks on them, or like almost all the fish were super healthy looking, which is very good, which means those fish probably have never been caught before. I would imagine maybe when they're super small fish, they were caught once, but, and you know, I this is the other thing I think about. Do you know how much water these fish are actually covering? I know the stock population isn't that good, and I've never fished when the population of striped bass was at its best, but the amount of water that they have to cover for people to be able to catch them literally at any like indent anywhere on shore and offshore, just randomly around, is extraordinary. The sheer amount of bass is staggering. The like mind-blowing, the amount of them. So that, yeah, they're not doing very well, but there are millions upon millions upon millions of fish all up and down the coast. Probably billions of fish. But, and I wonder, there's probably some estimate of how many bass there actually are, but you think about how, like, you can drive for, at least for me, like, you drive from where I'm at, actually, you drive from Maine, probably takes from the, or you go to Canada, you can still catch them in Canada. Okay, so imagine this, driving from, like, Nova Scotia all the way to, like, Cape May, New Jersey, okay? That is, I guarantee you that's like a 18 to 20 hour drive. I have no idea. I'm just guessing. That's like 18, 20 hour drive. Now, every single boulder, indent, rock point, rip, sandbar, whatever, and also offshore, deep water, bait school, whatever, there are fish on. Now, and it even goes further than that. You can catch them in, like, in South Carolina, right? North Carolina? I don't even know. So you catch them North Carolina, Virginia. Like, that's so much space. That's hundreds and hundreds of miles. And that's just so much space that they're all covering at a constant point. That just shows you the sheer number of fish that there are. Now you kind of see what goes through my head. I literally have been thinking about this nonstop for the past 2-3 weeks now, of like just like randomness that's going on in my brain. I should like label this 20 like my thoughts about spring fishing for 2020 and the randomness in my brain podcast, because this is like the most random, like, these are random topics. I'm sorry, but this is where my head's at right now, and this is what you guys are getting. And there's going to be some good tidbits in here about tips and tricks and whatever, and hopefully this is going to help you, like, help you get through some time driving in a car, hanging out during in quarantine, because this is the most boring time in the world. So I'm trying to make a good amount of content, even though I've slacked on Instagram for a few days because I'm trying to catch fish, because I'm running out of photos, because I don't want to repost photos, and it's been a struggle right now. So, you know, it's so close to the beginning of the season, I have a bunch of randomness in my brain about things that I think about all the time, and that's one of them that I'm always just shocked about, the amount of area that they cover in every estuary, river, you know, open sandy beach, rock, boulder field. You know, there's so many fish. There's gotta be, and that's what always makes me think, what, the biggest fish somebody's ever caught is 87 pounds or whatever it is. There's gotta be bass that are easily 100 pounds out there that nobody's ever caught before. I think that, I don't know, like, I would love for somebody to catch a 100 pound bass, just because I would love to see how big it is. It would be, what, 75, 80 inches and, like, hugely thick around. Imagine how hard that would fight. It would be one thing if you hooked it in a boat, you know, and you could like kind of get it out of there. But imagine hooking that from like shore in a boulder field. Like if I hooked that in like the places where I catch a lot of my bigger fish on the boulder fields, Yeah, that would be, not only are you moving 100 pounds of mass through the water, you're moving 100 pounds of muscle that's fighting against you. And it's built for just brute power in current. And so that thing takes off, you're getting a fight of a lifetime, you know, for sure. Like, talk about, like, people always say, oh, striped bass don't fight nearly as hard as pelagic fish do. And I talked about this last podcast too, but come on. A big bass, big heavy fish in current, you canal guys know what I'm talking about. That thing is powerful. Like, I've caught a huge fish in the canal before. That it's a powerful thing in the current, and it's because you're fighting just the mass of the fish too. It's not just like the like, it's crazy. And so that I wonder, you know, if it would be even possible to land a fish of that magnitude. You'd literally need 80 pound to 90 pound braid on 100 pound leader, fluorocarbon leader. And people always ask me too, why am I using fluorocarbon over mono? Because fluorocarbon, especially 80 pound fluorocarbon, is hard to tie. I agree with you. It is hard to tie. It's also very hard to break. I don't use fluorocarbon because I think the fish can see like monofilament. I use fluorocarbon because the fluorocarbon, in my opinion, just has a little bit more abrasion resistance to it. And so it just will help me a little bit better when I get taken into the rocks. And when the bass is scraping my lure across the rock, it's hopefully not going to cut. I honestly think you could throw, I know you can throw straight braid and catch fish. It doesn't matter. You don't need a leader. It's just that leaders help when you're grabbing the line, so you don't tear your hand up. The amount of time, and I will do it every year, and I'll do it again and again and again and again, when I grab on, I wrap my hand around braided line and the fish pulls, I slice my hands to death. I've told this too, and it is so funny. So I caught one of my bigger fish of this, like my first 40, I think it was my first 40 pound bass of the season. And the next day I had a doctor, like a yearly checkup appointment. And not only did I catch that fish, I caught a bunch of other low teen fish. My hands from grabbing onto the mouth of that fish and it chomping down on my hand and twisting and stuff when I was trying to unhook it were hamburger, like completely like red and bleeding and irritated. And if you've been like scraped by a fish in any way, shape or form, infected, and not really badly infected, but you know what I'm saying? Like whenever you get scraped or spined by a bass, your hand gets like red and like irritated, like the area that more so than if you just cut your hand. And so I come to the doctors and both my hands are just mutilated from these fish. And he was like, well, what happened to your hand? I was like, oh, I caught a big fish last night. And he was fortunately a fisherman, so he kind of understood what was going on. But yeah, I think that was hilarious. So my thought is now, when I'm going for trophy fish, to wear a glove so that I can grab the fish by the mouth and haul it up onto the rock so I don't destroy my hands, number one. And also, I grab a fish, it shakes out of my hand because I can't grab onto it and then have it just be shredding my hand up. Just psychologically, your grip is not really as strong as it would be if I had a glove and it didn't hurt whatsoever. Even though when you have your adrenaline going, you grab a fish, you know, you clamp down onto that thing. The thing's not going anywhere. And one of my biggest regrets last season is trying to land a easy mid 40 pound bass for someone and like grabbing the leader, touching the fish and losing the fish. Because I didn't grab the fish itself, because that's something that like keeps me up at night, you know. My little dude fell off my. You can't have our mascot fall off the thing. Oh no! And the scale that's in it. In one of the earlier podcasts, I was taking my bag apart, and my plug bag, and I was just showing off some stuff in my plug bag like after the season was done, and I found this massive fish scale in the plug bag, and the fish scale is easily of a 30-40 pound bass. So that was kind of cool. So I kept it inside his little bucket there. If you haven't watched the podcast, I have a little setup here on my my table where my microphone is, where I have a bunch of my plugs, and I have this little guy, has his fishing rod and his net, this little metal guy, and he's the little mascot for the podcast. Well, and then the other thing that I guess wanted to talk about is single hooks and fishing with single hooks. I've had a good, like, I switched out my SP minnows with single hooks and single hook teasers as well on the back, where like I've tied little bucktail teasers under the single tail hook as well. Oh my gosh. I don't know why anybody fishes SP minnows with trebles anymore. Like fishing with single hooks. I mean, granted I've not caught a fish yet this season, but I also haven't gotten a hit yet this season from a fish either. So I can't tell you if it works or not, but the action on the thing is killer. So, and I can't imagine it's going to be any less of a hookup ratio. I'm sure it's going to easily hook right in and be perfect. Yeah. So come on. I think single hooks on SP minnows from here on out, period. No matter what time of the season is. Number one, trebles suck for strength wise. I need to get, as I was saying, I have so many different, between owner and Mustad and VMC, like different treble hooks that I've had people say you need to test out owner hooks. You need to test out, what is it? Mustad. Those are the two that I've fished. I fish primarily VMCs, and I fish up to 8X strong VMCs on a lot of my plugs, but there are other much sharper, much stronger plugs that are much more expensive made by owner and Mustad that are, that I want to try out. Cause I know that the VMCs are solid hooks, solid for rusting. They don't rust too badly. They do rust pretty quick, but they're not that bad at it. But I fish primarily them, and I've only had the 4X strong get bent on fish. It just really is the thing. Like, I've bent multiple 4X strong VMCs on fish. I've actually never lost a fish due to a bent hook, knock on wood, completely that time. But I'm hoping that now what I'm going to do is fish when I know there's a possibility of catching big fish, to fish really, really, really heavy hooks on my plugs. And not weight wise, just like in strength wise, because I don't feel like I have much of a problem chalking a big hook into a fish's mouth. I have more of a problem when that fish is hooked on one point of the treble, and it's a 30 pound bass, and it takes off towards a rock, and I have my drag locked, and all of the pressure is on one hook shank of a treble hook. So like a singular hook shank here. Like all of the pressure's on that one hook shank, and it just bends or breaks. So that's what I don't want to have happen. I've broken hooks with plugs. I had one fish where I swear it broke the hook, and then the plug flipped around and rehooked it. And so literally broke a hook, a 4X strong VMC just snapped. That's like pretty ridiculous. And I'm not like fishing the canal. I don't have like ridiculous current. Like there's decent current there, but it's not like that ridiculous. There's current, but it's not crazy. And so that hook snapping is back to my point. Is this, VMC, I think it's like maybe, I don't know, it's just a VMC J hook here. Is this going to get bent out? Because yeah, I mean, it's a single hook. It's pretty... it seems pretty sturdy, but I've seen some, and it's funny because sometimes you'll catch a giant fish and it will do nothing to your gear, and sometimes you'll have a medium-sized fish and it will destroy everything, and I don't know why. I think it's just the way it fit. Sometimes the bass are rolling in the water, sometimes they get hooked weird. I guess it all depends, but as far as like in the split rings, this is the other thing. I've bent out split ring. Here's the thing. First of all, yes, I've lost fish due to bent out hooks. That's happened. Now I'm thinking about it. And also, I've lost fish to losing like the swivels opening up. Not the swivels, what is it? The split rings, sorry. The split rings opening up on SP Minnows. Again, coming back to SP Minnows, the most garbage treble hooks, the first thing you do when you get an SP Minnow, unhook, like take the hooks off and throw them in the trash, including their split rings are awful. The worst split rings. This is what you do the next time you get an SP Minnow. Take your SP Minnow, get a little bit of line or some pliers, grab onto the tail hook of your SP Minnow and pull and see what happens. Either your split ring is going to explode or your hook is going to bend out straight. Like it's the worst hook. I was looking around to see if I actually had an SP Minnow around because I was going to do it right now. But they are the worst hooks and split rings, period, out there on that come on a factory plug, I think. Like, that I've used, at least, that I've used. It's so bad. And so, again, single hooks on those things seem to work perfectly. Like, the action of everything is beautiful. I'm going to try to keep using them. But yeah, so that's fine. But then split rings, I don't generally have a problem with, you know, because I try to fit like the heaviness of a split ring to the plug that I'm using. And most of the time when I know I have a plug that has the potential to catch a big fish, I put heavy split rings on it and I put big trebles on it or single hooks. Because like, I know that this could be productive and I know that I could be like, this could be a bass to get me my trophy. I want to like, I think about every plug. If I like, think I can catch a 50-pound bass on it, then I'm gonna switch the hooks out and switch the split rings depending on what I'm fishing. And certain plug companies go 4x strong, certain go 5x strong. I know Puma Plugs is gonna try to switch over to be doing 5x strong primarily, and maybe even having an option of choosing either the brand of your treble hook or the strength of your treble hook. So if you want to get like 8x strong VMCs on a specific plug, you can have them come, you can like add that to your cart and add the extra heavy split ring so you don't have to do it yourself, which is really sick. That was something that I was talking to him a lot about because I fish harder than, I don't know anybody that like fishes with as heavy drag that I do. Or at least I don't fish with anybody that does fish as heavy drag that I do. And so I was like, see, I test my plugs and gear to the limit. When I was testing like the drag tight strengths of my line or my Vanstall reels, which was the last podcast, my line snapped at like 50 pound braid, snapped at like 15 pounds or less than 50. It was like 8 pounds or something. It was horrible. I was scared because I was like, number one, I've put way more pressure than that last season with that line on a fish. I need to get new line, and I will, like in June, I will upgrade that line. I'm testing out this Max Quattro Power Pro line on my big Vanstall. I just want to see how it goes. And then I'm going to probably switch over to that because casting distance to me is not as big a deal as strength. I don't fish, and maybe I will now that I'm fishing off of sandy beaches, but I don't fish off the rocks in any areas that I need extraordinary casting distance. Most of the time I'm casting maybe 25 yards away from me, which is, you can do with almost any plug slash eel. 20, 25 yards is like in within that, like the bass are going to be eating maybe 10 yards closer to me than that, but like I can cast at least that far and that's where I feel comfortable. If I can get a plug or an eel or whatever to that distance, I'm like, yeah, that's like a good casting distance. I don't need any more than that. That's why I'm not scared to go up to 80 pound braid, because I don't necessarily need the casting distance of like 30 pound braid. And even though it's getting up there in thickness, I still think it casts better than any monofilament line out there. And plus never, and I repeat, never fish monofilament line on your reel straight ever. And the reason for that is it's like when you're fishing with that, you have absolutely zero sensitivity. When you try to hook set, it's a giant rubber band. It's literally a giant rubber band. It's like a surgical tube. It's like you're fishing with a surgical tube. You try to hook set, it kills your hook set completely to the fish. Like you get zero hook set onto the fish. Yeah. Like I hook set, and then maybe 3 seconds later, my line has like a tiny little tug, you know, at the end of my line. So like, never fish braided line for striped bass. It's fine if you're fishing in a pond, but for striped bass, it's not the play. I would not be fishing that for striped bass at all. Yeah, I mean, and that's just my thought about, I mean, I guess that just shows you how against monofilament line. I mean, this is 80 pound, like I just picked up a little stretch. This is 80 pound max quattro line here that I'm holding in my hand. That's thinner than, that's probably what, maybe, I don't know, 15, 20 pound mono thickness or less, maybe 10 pound monofilament thickness. If I had to guess. So it's not too bad, you know, because I would not be fishing with 10 pound or 15, even 20 pound monofilament for striped bass. I would at least go to 30. I don't feel like I would not fish for even schoolies. Like, I fish for schoolies with, like, okay. So I am fishing 30 pound leader on my spring for the first 2 weeks of spring. I'm going to be fishing a 30 pound leader, and then I'm going to be cutting it off, because I think that 30 pound test is enough that I feel like I can pull a fish out of the rocks if I need to early in the season. But if I even am remotely in the mindset that I'm going to be targeting a larger fish, I'm going to 50 or 60 or 70 or 80 pound fluorocarbon instantly, without even two thoughts in my head, because I don't think striped bass are, in fact, I think striped bass are one of the least finicky fish out there, and especially at night. And I fish mostly at night, so it doesn't really matter anyway. I do fish during the day, but more to just explore. A lot of the time, if I'm fishing during the day, I'm just exploring new locations and seeing if certain things work, if plugs are working, if whatever. So that's why I fish during the day. I do like, and I mean, who doesn't like getting a big topwater blow up by a nice size fish? That's another reason why I like fishing during the day. But otherwise, there's no point for me to be fishing during the day. I'm just going to be catching schoolies. Maybe I'll catch the odd, you know, 25, 30 pound fish. And that's like being generous with size, by the way. Like, you're more likely to catch something maybe 35 inches, maybe maybe 40. But other than that, that's the best you're going to be hoping for. And even then, that's pretty rare to do, even in my best of spots. But I will redact that statement for both the spring and the fall run. Spring run, you do have an ability / opportunity to land a giant fish during the day, as well as in the fall, because just the bass seem to be more aggressive and migrating that time of year. But it's not like, I'm not saying it's impossible. You can land 50 pound bass during the day. I'm just saying it's much less likely, especially, you know, in general. So that's just the way I fish. Anyway, so thank you guys for listening to this random podcast, this random podcast of me just spouting off just everything that's in my brain. This is more like a brain dump into, so hopefully you guys kind of enjoyed that. The other thing is, you guys should be getting can you see this? You should be seeing, come on, you should be seeing, I'm like, it's like reversed on the screen here. That's why I was like messed up here. You should be seeing your t-shirts coming this week. I've heard from a few people saying they've already gotten them. So hopefully you guys, that grab the Striped Bass Hunt t-shirts, that are supporting the show, they should be showing up this week. They should be showing up. I heard that everybody should get them by May 4th, which is cool, which means that you guys should be catching fish by then too. Unless you're in Maine, in which case I feel for you, because that must be awful to have another like 2 or 3 weeks before you get fish. Okay, so thank you guys so much for listening to this podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed it, and I'll see you next time.